Well, here we are again, week number three of this series called Collision, where sex and spirituality collide. And, you know, that scene right there, a very fascinating scene, by the way, you know, probably takes you back to some of those conversations. You know, and her line is interesting. I wish somebody would have told me. In fact, you know, when it comes to relationships, sexuality, a lot of the things we're looking at through this series are things that nobody ever bothered to tell us. And so, you know, as we just saw there, relationships, whenever the physical begins to enter the relationship, it takes relationships to a whole different place. And all of a sudden, relationships get really complex, especially when the sexual begins to get introduced. So we're going to take a look at that today. Really, that's what we've been doing through this series. You know, a lot of the media that comes at us each and every day in the form of television, music, magazines, whatever it might be, you know, says one message. It says sex is strictly physical. And we've been taking a look at how, you know, sex is way more than physical. And we intuitively know that, but we hear it so often that sometimes we forget it. And so we're taking a look behind the closed doors. We're kind of taking a look underneath the covers, in a sense, of what happens, you know, when you're here and you've got all of this baggage and these things that nobody ever bothered to tell you. And now all of this is kind of coming to the head and playing out in your life. And where do we go with that? And so today we're going to take a look at this relational component. You know, sex is emotional, it's relational, it's mental, it's physical, it's spiritual. I mean, it's totally integrated. Really want to focus today, as Eric said, on the relational side. So before we do that, let's pray. God, we're thankful we can come into a place like this and hear things we do, and talk about things we don't talk about in many other places in culture, at least with the openness, authenticity, and kind of the directness that we can in here. And God, you know, this sexuality is a big deal. I mean, whether we want to admit it or not, it runs rampant. The messages, the themes, even the desires that we have for that. And yet, God, you had a very specific plan, a very specific intention. And for many of us, each and every one of us have different experiences with that and bring different things to the table as we sit here today. And so, you know, we want you to just be in this place. We pray that your grace would be in this place. God, we pray that you would help us to grow. And you would help us to see things that maybe we've never seen before. And most of all, God, help us to experience you in some unique way, in some way that you give us a glimpse, a picture of your grace, of your love, of the picture of how you, the picture that you desire for our lives and specifically for our sexuality. Pray these things in your name and according to your character. Amen. Well, you know, every single Saturday, there are single people all over the city, all over the state, all over the world. In fact, that put on nice clothes. Women will put a white dress on or almost white dress on. You know, they'll get all dressed up and probably look more beautiful than they've ever looked. Men, on the other hand, will typically put on a tux or a nice suit and will be much more handsome than they really are, if you're really honest. And you know, and they'll spend thousands of dollars and months of planning, all geared toward this one day where somebody like myself, a pastor or maybe a justice of the peace, is going to stand before them, and at a particular part in this gathering, you know, is going to say, repeat these words. And in those next moments, single people all across the country, every single Saturday, say words that they intend to keep but aren't able to. And it's one of those realities of them saying, you know, it's not like they're lying in that moment. It's not like they don't intend to keep these commitments, but it's just hard. I mean, they're making commitments that they weren't prepared for. In fact, you know, 3, 4, 5 months into marriage, you know, 6 months, 8 months into marriage, all of a sudden they're going, man, this is hard. I mean, nobody ever told me it was going to be hard. I mean, I was working so hard because I wanted to make sure we got to the wedding day. And then all of a sudden the pressure is off and reality sets in. And you know, and oftentimes people come to that place and they're like, I know what I said. I mean, I know the things I said there, and it is hard to fulfill those things. And we even get to the place where we begin to wonder, man, I wonder if I even married the wrong person. Now, don't raise your hands, but have you ever thought that? All right, because your spouse might be sitting right next to you. You know, if we're honest, nearly every single married person has thought that at one point or another. I wonder if I married the wrong person. And all of a sudden, it gets very complex. And here's the big thing. If you don't walk away with anything else than this today, here's the thing I want us to grasp today. When it comes to relationships, when a relationship goes sexual, it either enhances the relationship or it destroys it. One of the two. And here's how you can kind of determine how this is going to play out. You see, God has this gift of sexuality that he gave to each and every one of us, and he intends it to be this uniting thing, this like glue, like super glue, like gorilla tape stuck on each other that you can't separate. And when that happens, this is God's design for the sexual experience, to be something that mirrors a physical reality mirroring a spiritual reality. I mean, this is something that kind of mirrors the intimacy that God desires for us to have with him, with someone that we've chosen to commit our lives to for the rest of our lives. And that takes place. And yet when outside the context of marriage, when sex is experienced outside the highest level of human commitment, and we mirror that with the highest level of intimacy, which was God's design, when that takes place outside of that context of marriage, you often begin to lose the relationship. When sex is introduced into that relationship, it becomes the centerpiece, and the relationship falls to the back seat. And it happens time and time again. And I wish I could explain it in a different way. I wish that when couples come and talk to me about this at times that I could explain it differently. But it's this whole idea of love and sex and intimacy getting all warped and confused. And what ended up happening is oftentimes we get to that day when we're joining our lives with the person we want to marry, and we're making commitments that we aren't going to be able to keep. And let me just say this, you know, sometimes when we say I do, just saying the words I do doesn't mean we're capable. All right, just because we say the words I do doesn't mean you're able to actually fulfill them. And you know what happens when you're not capable of fulfilling those things? When we're not capable, but we know we're accountable, because we're very aware of accountability. Man, I made these commitments. I mean, it might get put in your face a lot of times. Hey, you said for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer. We know what we're accountable to. You know what happens when you're accountable for something you're not capable of? You're miserable. And no, like doing this right now, right? Because you know, because some of us know the miserable state that can happen when we're in a marriage that we know the accountability, we know the things we committed to, but we're not fully able to follow through on them. And so today, I want to look at this because every single Saturday, single people all over the world come together and make commitments they're not able to fulfill. And so I want to look at what happens when relationally, when people begin dating, get engaged, when the sexual experience, which was designed for a very specific context, how it begins, when it begins to play in earlier and in a different context, how that can be very damaging and create a lot of baggage. It can mess with our filters. We can end up in places where we make decisions that go with us for the rest of our lives, and we didn't even realize it. And this seems like common sense. I mean, it's like, man, this is common sense. And it's interesting because, you know, what we think is common sense sometimes isn't so common. And so I want to take a look at this today. And I'm going to kind of state the obvious, because sometimes when we fall in love, you know what happens? It's like you lose your mind. Right? I mean, we lose our minds. It's like, I'm in love. And you know, we begin to not see things that everybody else around us sees. And maybe when the sexual experience comes in, there's a uniting at a different place. And then there's all kinds of other complexities that come in. Like, man, if I've had sex with this person, should I marry this person? And maybe, you know, maybe that's the way it's supposed to be. So it's not necessarily the person I want to spend the rest of my life with. But at the same time, we've got ourselves here, so we might as well carry through. And again, we put ourselves in positions where we make commitments that we're not able to fulfill. And so today, I want to kind of unpack this, and I want to unpack, you know, how do we look at this? Where's the common sense in this? How do we, and some of us are going to have aha moments this morning. I'm going to guarantee if you're married, you're going to be like, oh my word, this explains some things. If you're single here today, I'm hoping that you can take some things away from this and say, okay, this can help me make good decisions in my relationships as I go forward. And so I want us to look at Solomon. There was a guy named Solomon in the Old Testament. He writes the book of Proverbs, and he's one of the wisest men that ever lived, at least up to Jesus. I mean, Jesus is probably the wisest man that ever lived ever. But Solomon was up there, and he had said many wise things. And so Solomon, he talks about this word. The word is prudent. Now, we don't use the word prudent very often, so I want to explain what prudent is. Because, you know, you say, well, the root of prudent is prude, and that nobody's interested in that. Well, prudent is a lot broader than that. So here's what prudent is right here. Prudent is a person. A prudent person is a person who understands that all of life is connected. All of life is integrated. A prudent person understands and realizes that what happened yesterday is actually important. A prudent person is a person that understands what I'm doing today will eventually become my past, and it will show up in my future. That's what a prudent person does. And so, you know, here's Solomon's wisdom, and we can take this relation. This has huge implications relationally right here today. So here's what Solomon says. He says, the wisdom of the prudent is to give thought to their ways. Now, let me tell you what ways are. Ways are behaviors. Ways are pathways. Ways are patterns, habits, trends. Ways are like when you were a kid and your parents knew what you were going to do before you do it. You did it. They knew that because you had ways about yourself. All right. It's why when you ask your spouse a question, you already know what the answer is going to be because your spouse has ways. They have patterns about their life. We all have ways, right? So the writer of Proverbs says that the prudent person gives thought to their ways. And what he's saying is, hey, you know, the prudent person, the best predictor of where their life is going is looking at where they've been. And if you want to know where your life's going, just take a moment and look at your past. It'll tell you exactly where you're pointing. Right? And then Solomon goes on. And he says, but the folly of fools is deception. Now, that doesn't exactly make sense by itself. But when you contrast the two statements, and that's what a proverb is, by the way. A proverb is taking two different statements and contrasting them with one another. And he said, and what he's saying here is the prudent person is constantly examining and evaluating the ways, the habits, the patterns, the trends of their life and where they're pointed, where they're heading. And the fool, on the other hand, doesn't pay attention to any of these things. And so the fool somehow thinks that magically, even though this is where I want to be and none of my steps point that way, one day I'm just going to end up there. Boom, I'm right there where I want to be, even though there's nothing in my life that's trending or habiting or pointing me in that way. He says, that's foolish. And then he's even more clear a few verses later, verse 15. He says, the simple will believe anything. Now, here's what happens. Like I said, when you're in love, it's like you lose your mind, right? I mean, when we're in love, you remember losing your mind. You're like, oh, you know, I'm in love. I mean, you're overlooking all of the negative things that might be going on with this person you're in love with. And you know, maybe you're dating your boyfriend, your girlfriend, and your parents are like, oh, are you sure that's the one you want to continue dating? You're like, hey, we have something right here. You know what you have? You have a song, right? Remember having a song? You're like, we have a song, and your parents are like, but does he have a job? And you're like, it doesn't matter if he has a job, because we have a song. We have a song. That's all that matters. And you're like, and by the way, you know, we had our second month anniversary the other day, and he bought me this cute little puppy dog, you know, with this little nose, and you'll never get this. I drove by his parents' house. He's living with his parents. Drove by his parents' house the other day. He has a dog just like it. It's a sign. And your parents are like, by all means then, let's just call on the pastor right now. Let's just have a ceremony right here. Because everything's aligning. You see, this is when we lose our mind when we fall in love. We lose our mind. Now, so you know, when we fall in love, we'll believe anything, right? I mean, love is blind, and it's true. But sometimes love needs to have some prudence involved in it. All right? It's like when the guy comes to you, women, and he's like, hey, honey, I've got some addictions over here. I've got some stuff going on the side. I don't have a job. I got a lot of debt. But I tell you what, if you will marry me, I will change for you. And you know what Solomon says? Solomon says, that is stupid. That is stupid. All right? That's what Solomon says. Look, he says, a simple will believe anything. And he goes on, and he says, but the prudent give thought to their steps. Now, the prudent give thought to their steps. What is a step? A step is a pathway. Why are steps important? Because they tell us where you're going. A step tells you where the person is pointing. You know, a step tells you where they've been and the trend that their life is on. And this is why when your parents come to you and they're like, are you really sure you want to date that person? I mean, we know who they've dated in the past. We know that they have no job. We know how much debt they have and how long have they been in, you know, divorced? I mean, they're asking you questions. And you're like, it doesn't matter. Our initials are the same already. Like the stars have aligned. I mean, we lose our mind. We lose our mind. And Solomon says, the prudent give thoughts to their steps. Here's why this is so important relationally. Here's why. Because when we come to that point, every single Saturday, marriages happen all over this world. And I would suggest that in many cases, when we fall in love, we lose prudence. We lose this saying, do I really want to spend the rest of my life with this person? Is this really the kind of person that's trending in the direction that I'm trending? That's about the things that I'm about? That's about, are our ways really congruent? And when the sexual experience comes in out of context, it begins to cloudy the relationship, and we make decisions even out of guilt sometimes. In fact, one of my friends said to me one time, she said, Kurt, somebody like you, meaning a pastor, the best advice they ever gave me was not to marry my daughter's father. He said, we did some really dumb stuff when we were younger. I got pregnant when I was young. We weren't married. The best advice he gave me, we thought we should get married. That's what you do, right? You have sex, you have a baby together, you should get married. The best advice we ever got was don't marry your daughter's father. Just because we've united doesn't mean it's the best for our future. It gets really complex. Relationships get really complex when the sexual encounter enters out of the context and we begin making decisions that affect the rest of our lives. In that moment. And so here's the cool thing. This is really cool. Here's what God does in this. You know, you might be sitting there thinking, man, I think that's my problem. I married the wrong person. I mean, we've all probably had, if you're married, you've had that thought before. You've probably had that thought. Here's what God does. If you think you've married the wrong guy, and you know, and you've stood and you've made those covenants, here's what happens. Here's what Jesus says happens as soon as those commitments are made. He says, therefore, what God has joined together right here, let no one separate. No one separate. to say, I don't care if you should have been together, shouldn't have been together, if your parents thought you should be together, I don't care if you had a job, didn't have a job. You know, regardless of when you how you came to that point, when you came to that point and made those commitments to say, I'm going to join my life, you made a covenant to physically, emotionally, spiritually, sexually join your life with your spouse. God says, man, I'm going to bless that thing, and from this point forward, I'm going to give you the tools to work through this. And let no one separate it. And this is a really big deal because, you know, sometimes we're looking for the out and we're looking for that moment to say, well, maybe this means we need to get divorced and we're not compatible. And I hate the word compatibility. People say that to me all the time. Let me give you my little spiel on compatibility for a moment. You know, compatible, we overuse that word. Here's what compatible means. The prefix com means with. Patible is the Greek word pathos, which means to suffer. Do the math. Compatible actually means to suffer with, all right? And some of you are saying, that's what I'm doing. That's what I've been doing for 20 years. I've been suffering. Here, but it doesn't mean this. Here's what it means. It means, hey, you just got somebody to go through the joys of life together as well as to suffer and struggle through the difficult times of life together. It's not about, you know, do you guys see everything the same way? Do you come from different ways? You should have figured that out before. Now that you're together, it's time for you to start working through it together. That's what it means. It means I'm gonna go through the struggles of life. We're going to suffer together because it's a lot better to do it together than by myself. That's what compatible means. God's saying, I'm gonna make you compatible with one another. And so this is huge. This is huge to understand. Why am I where I am? What were the filters? Was I prudent? Was this person going my way? Were they not going my way? And the reality is if you're married, it doesn't matter because when those vows happen, God says, hey, let no one separate this. And so now, how do we begin to go forward? If you're single, these are critically important things to think through relationally in terms of how the sexual aspect plays in. And so I want to walk through some specific applications for the rest of our time this morning. And this will not only help us keep the promises we may be in right now, but they may also deal with the relational baggage. And that's huge when it comes to our sexual lives. Every time I meet with a couple that I'm in a preparation meeting for marriage on, like we're planning the ceremony, one of the first questions I say is, do you still want to get married? And they usually laugh at me. And I'm like, I'm serious. I've never had this happen. I had a friend of mine that asked that question, and one time somebody said, well, you know, I'm not sure. I'm like, hey, if I can help you figure that out before, not that that's my goal, but if we need to do that before, man, it will save you a lifetime of pain. And so these are things. How do we deal with this if we're single? If you're single, it's important to know that these things are going to help you. You're at a great time when you're continually looking for the person that you want to marry. And how do I become the person that the person I'm looking for is looking for? Right? Does that make sense? How do I become the person that I want to marry is actually looking for me? And if you're married, then how do we strengthen our marriage? How do we work through some of our baggage? You know, because we all have relational baggage. How do I work through this so we can strengthen our marriage, our sex life? Because the relationships, not just our past sexual relationships, all of our relationships impact our sexual lives. And so as we do this, you know, let me just say generally, the things we talk about in this church week in and week out, week after week after week, all build into these things. All right, so there's certain things. You know, one of these things is, you know, we need to have an appropriate understanding of marriage and divorce. I'm not going to go into that today. If you've ever contemplated divorce and you're married, then I want to give you a tool. If you go to our website, wearecrosspoint.com/recently-mentioned, we're putting some resources up here. I did a teaching a while back in our Love and Marriage series called Foundations. It will break down the covenants of marriage and the reasons that where divorce is permitted. And I'm going to be honest with you. You're going to be surprised on why sometimes divorce is permitted. Everybody thinks it's one way. It's not. If you struggle with grace and forgiveness in your marriage, go listen to this message. And listen to this message and then say, okay, where do I need to go from here? All right, accountability is something. If you don't have this in your life, if you need to work through some marriage issues, if you need to make some changes as a single to begin to shape your life more into the person that you want to be so that when you find that person you're looking for, they're also looking for you. Then accountability, having somebody to help you in this growth process is going to help, is going to be critically important. We did a series last month, Everyday Breakthroughs, talked about addictions, but we mainly talked about accountability. How do I put people in my life that can speak into me? You can find that link at that website right there under Recently Mentioned. It's going to be on the left-hand side of our front page of our website. And so, you know, generally speaking, all of our environments every weekend are gearing people toward the habits, the trends, the patterns that will allow you to continue to grow into the whole person that God created you to be. So I want to spend the next 10, 12, 14 minutes on kind of breaking these out. And these have huge implications relationally and sexually. The first thing you need to do, whether single or married, is you need to address your unresolved childhood issues. And this is a big category right here. And yeah, I could do a whole teaching series on this. We're not, but let me give you a quote from some experts on this, Les and Leslie Parrott. They say, if you attempt to build intimacy with a person, like getting married one day, before you've done the hard work of becoming a whole, healthy person, every relationship will be an attempt to complete that hole in your heart. Here's what they're saying. If you attempt to get involved in a marriage before you've done the hard work of becoming a whole, healthy person, every relationship's going to have a hole. You're going to be looking to fill things in your life that relationship was never intended to fill. And again, some of us that are married are saying, wow, man, I'm connecting some dots right now. I mean, this is huge. I mean, this means turning around and facing some of the issues from your childhood. You know, maybe you've never done that. And I want to show you a diagram here. This is a diagram I sometimes use with married people. I saw this from Andy Stanley a number of years ago. And sometimes I'll draw it in a counseling session with married people. I thought, you know, I never show this to single people. And so you're going to see it for the first time. Here's what it is. This is you, and this is your parents. And in between is a lot of drama. All right? There's a lot of drama between you and your parents. And if this represents your relationship with your parents, all right, if maybe, you know, dad left or mom, you know, jetted on the family, or dad was an alcoholic, or maybe he was there, but he was always working, never investing in the family. You know, if there's drama and tension and disconnect between you and your parents, and you might be sitting there saying, well, I don't have drama. I mean, I send my mom a Mother's Day card. Really? That's like, are they alive? Is that all you do? Send a Mother's Day card? I mean, if you're not talking to your parents regularly, you don't have that kind of healthy relationship, then there's probably some drama right there. And so I want to show you an image here in just a moment. And I'm going to be honest with you. This is going to, if you are married this morning, this is going to take every ounce of your energy to not do one of these. All right? So if you're married and sitting with your spouse, just look straight ahead. All right? Just maintain eye contact with me. Watch the screens. All right? If there's been angst, if there's been drama in your relationship with your parents, here's what happened when your spouse entered the picture. Here's where they went. Right at the head of it. This is what happens. They catch it all, and this is a bad thing. They can't even figure this out. They don't know why they can't do the right thing. You don't even know why they don't measure up, but they are dead in the water. You might be 20 years into a marriage, and you're still dead in the water because you've never figured this thing out. And you know, you say something like, you know, I've heard things like, you know, all I said is, you know, I'd like to be early every now and then, and all of a sudden, you know, World War III just erupted right there, and you don't know why. You don't know why. Or maybe it's kind of like, you know, we get in a conversation and he always reacts or she always overreacts. And all of a sudden, you know, World War III, and you can't figure it out. And you might even know it. You might know it, but you wouldn't even dare mention it to them. Because it's going to be another big explosion. So you just keep shoveling it at one another, right? Keep shoveling it. And let me tell you, if you're the person that's got this drama between you and your parents, then let me just tell you are not going to be able to look in the mirror and see this. All right, you are not going to be able to see this yourself. The best thing you can do, the smartest thing you can do is go see a counselor. You can go see a counselor. Make an appointment with a counselor. Start counseling. Start dealing with your past. Now, if you're single, this is what's going to happen. After months and months and months and months of counseling, thousands of dollars later, all of a sudden, you know, one of these spouses is going to go, oh, so I still have issues with my mama. And the other spouse is going to be like, well, yeah, but see, you can't say that because as soon as you say that, Then it's like World War III again. You know, I mean, this is a hard, hard issue. It's a hard issue right here. But let me tell you what, if you're single, this is enormous. Deal now with your childhood issues. I mean, there's probably not going to be a time in your life where you should be more motivated to deal with these than right now. And if you're married, this needs to be the number one action item for you. I mean, if you have got some drama with your parents, you need to work it out so your spouse is not at the head of it. It's the smartest thing you can do. Next thing you need to do is you need to get out of debt. It's another application, you know. And this is ginormous. This is huge. This is one of those big, big things. And here's why. You might be thinking, well, what does getting out of debt, how does that impact my sex life and me experiencing sex to the highest extent possible the way God designed it? Well, if you're married, follow this logic track with me for a moment. There's three steps, all right? What's the number one stress in a marriage? Money, right? What's the number one factor of no sex in a marriage? Stress. No money, lots of stress, no sex. I mean, it's very, very simple. All right, single people, if you've got debt in your life, let me tell you what, and I think the married people in the room will agree, it is way easier to get out of debt when you're single than it is when you're married. Anybody agree with that? See a lot of heads nodding. Look around. It's a lot easier. Listen, this is huge. And you might be marrying somebody, and you're like, man, he promised me, man, I'm going to take care of your debt, honey. I'm going to pay off all your school loans, all your revolving credit cards, and all this stuff. Let me tell you what that's doing. That's bad. I mean, he's rescuing you, and you're just enabling irresponsibility. It's going to creep up again because you've not had to work through it. There's not a better time if you're single to work through your spending habits than when you're single. You know, think about that. I mean, you give a lot of gifts to your spouse when you get married. And sometimes, what if one of your gifts is saying, honey, you know, I'm giving you myself, but I also come with about $65,000 attached to me. What kind of gift is that? You got to work through this early. Again, we dealt with this recently. It's another one of those things. We deal with these kinds of issues all the time. A few weeks ago, during the Everyday Breakthroughs, we did a week on financial breakthroughs. If you weren't here for that Sunday, go listen to it. It's going to be in the recently mentioned folder. A couple of our financial counselors walking through the steps that we take people through to get financially free around here. It will literally change your life. I guarantee you. It'll change your marriage if you're in a marriage. It will have impact on your sex life. I guarantee you. You got to get out of debt. Here's the next one. When you're dating, postpone the physical ALAP. You know what ALAP is? As long as possible. Now, when I say physical right here, I'm not talking sex. I'm talking everything else. I've been doing this a long time. 15, 16 years, had couples coming in my office at different points. I've never had a single couple say to me, Kurt, you know, I think our relationship would be a lot healthier if we would have made the physical go a lot faster. I've never heard that. What I've usually heard is, man, you know, the first day, I mean, we were kissing on the first day. We were like rounding second on the second day. I mean, we were sleeping together on the third. And all of a sudden, man, it got really complicated. Because when the sexual experience comes in out of context, not matching the commitment level, then all of a sudden the sex takes the upper seat and the relationship takes the back seat. And we see it time and time again. And you know, women want to know, man, is he coming back? Man, I connected. There was an intimacy. There was a bond. I mean, something just went to a whole different level spiritually, emotionally, mentally, in every aspect. I want to know, is he coming back? Men are kind of like, man, I thought it was going to be a little better than that. I mean, you know, because understand, you know, sexual relationships, great sexual relationships don't just boom happen. We see them happen on the elevator on TV. That's not where great sex happens. It happens after years of the same two people learning together, growing together in a safe, committed context. And let me just say, man, if you're in the place where you're dating and she's the one saying, oh, come on, how come you don't want to go further? How come you don't want to do this? You know, if she's the one saying that, let me assure you, you are not the first one. All right? Let me just say that to you. Women, if after three dates, you know, he's kind of ditching you, not calling, and, you know, it's because, you know, you're saying, hey, you're not getting in my pants. We're not rolling around on the couch. We're not doing that. You know, all you need to say is, hey, I'm not that kind of girl. You need to go find a counselor and your mama, and you need to work all this stuff out. I mean, that's probably the best thing to say, and it's funny, and you can get on out and call me when you get it all worked out. All right, you see, you're why? What's the big deal here? Well, here's the deal. Talk about habits, pathways, trends. Self-control is a pathway. Self-control is a pathway. You see, those that are self-controlled before marriage are self-controlled after marriage. Self-control is a behavior. It's a trend. It says, my life is self-controlled, and I'm going to continue to head that direction. It's one of those things that, you know, whenever there's promiscuity, we don't use that word much anymore, promiscuity, whenever there's promiscuity before marriage is usually a sure sign there will be an affair after marriage. It's almost like clockwork. And check this out for yourself. Don't believe me. I mean, you don't have to believe everything I say. Go look at the statistics. And along these lines, here's another one. I almost decided not to do this one, but I thought, you know, it's a good kind of tag on right here. Avoid living together if at all possible. And when I say it all possible, I mean, some of you are like, well, you know, we've got reasons. Everybody's got reasons. You need to avoid living together. Avoid living together. Now, again, don't take my word from it. I'm a pastor, right? What do you expect me to say? All right? I mean, I chalk me up as the religious person. Just go look at the statistics. Go look at the statistics. You know, people say all the time, well, you know, we're going to live together. We're going to kind of kick the tires together. We're going to see if it works. You know, we're going to see if we're compatible. You know, this is not happening. In fact, there are no statistics that point toward living together being a factor in increasing your marital happiness and your sexual happiness in marriage. In fact, all of it points the other way. All of it actually points the other way. Couples that live together have a greater propensity for divorce. It's just in the statistics. In fact, individuals that have lived with two or three people before they enter a marriage relationship have a 0% chance statistically at that first marriage lasting. And I know about statistics. But you know what I know about statistics is we're only willing to listen to them if they agree with what we're already doing. So I get that. You're gonna agree or disagree based on that. But here's the deal. We all say, well, we're going to be the exception, right? You can be the exception. Most of us aren't. And so the statistics point this way. Now, last thing, and this is an interesting one. Last thing I'd encourage, this is the last thing I'll throw in with the kitchen sink. If you want to have a great, if you want to work out of your marriage stuff, if you want to have a great sex life, you need to be involved in serving in the local church. And here's why. You know, I see it happen all the time around here. There are people that come in here, they're looking to make some changes. They come and experience Christ in some unique way. They experience His grace, His love, and they got a lot of crap to get together in their life, but they begin this pathway of beginning to trend toward Christ, toward a life that resembles Christ. One of the most critical steps for somebody to take in those moments are to begin to serve. Because it goes against, serving goes against what I would call the greatest issue in our culture today, which is selfishness. And selfishness is rampant all around us. People say, what's the biggest issue? The sex, drugs, rock and roll, like you grew up in the 80s? You know, it's not that stuff. It's selfishness. It's selfish. I love. I mean, I have pictures that I love when I see something happen. I mean, I love watching the birth of our children. I love, you know, staying at marriage ceremonies and seeing two people who are truly prepared come to that place of joining their lives. I love those pictures. I love watching somebody who recently experienced Christ. I'm gonna begin to serve, and I'm going to take on a path of selflessness. Because that's what it is. You see, serving is a pathway. It's a trend. It's a habit. It's a pattern. It's something that's a predictor of your future, that you're growing in a certain direction. In fact, I would even venture to say that people that struggle to serve and volunteer in this kind of setting, in a school setting, whatever it might be where you're asked to serve and volunteer, if you struggle with that, if you do that out of guilt, if you do that out of, you know, well, I feel like I ought to, but I really don't want to because you have to give up some of your time. If you, you know, if you serve and you have a bad attitude about it, which we see sometimes. I mean, I hate going to places, whether it's here or somewhere else, and people have a bad attitude. That's not a blessing to anybody. It's doing damage to you. It's doing damage to others. But when I serve because I'm like, you know, it's going to cost me something. And yeah, I'm going to have to get here a little earlier. I'm going to have to maybe be here longer. When you take on that path of selflessness, you actually move off the path of selfishness. And I can guarantee you, people that struggle with serving in other venues or in the venue here, I can guarantee you in nearly every relationship in your life, you're selfish. You're strictly saying, what is in it for me? And if I can be brutally honest, when it comes to the sexual experience and a passionate, raw, uninhibited, know me as I am sexual encounter between a husband and a wife, that only happens at the fullest extent between two completely selfless individuals. It's kind of interesting. I'm not recommending you pair the two together while you're here. I mean, serving and sex and all that, people get arrested for that stuff, right? That's not what we're talking about. I'm talking about, are you creating a pathway of cultivating a selfless life? This is the hard work right here. This is the hard work of working toward becoming a whole person. And God does something mysterious. God does something mystical among us, inside of us, through us, as we continue to do this. As we continue to apply these things to our lives. And you know, God wants intimacy to be experienced in the fullest extent possible between a man and a woman in the context, the highest level of commitment. And there's a lot of baggage that we carry, a lot of relational baggage, some sexual baggage, some baggage that goes all the way back to our parents. But the question is, do we want to do the hard work? If we're single, do we want to do the hard work so when I meet that person, that's the person that I hope they're also looking for me, that I'm ready to make the commitments and fulfill them? And if I'm in a marriage where I'm thinking, man, I'm struggling because I'm realizing there's been a lot of baggage, or maybe this is the stuff that's got me where we are. Am I willing to take the steps toward wholeness and allow God to grow my marriage, to grow my relationship with my spouse, to grow my selflessness, to ultimately enhance my sexual life? It's hard work. It's hard work. I mean, imagine if you're single. Imagine on your married night, being able to say to your spouse, man, I've been preparing for months, years, to become the person that you were looking for. Ultimately, because it was really about me becoming the person I needed to be, and I knew when I did that, it'd be the person that was attracted to you. And what a blessing to say, if you're in a married context, if you're married, to be able to say to your spouse, man, I've got some drama, I've got some baggage, and I'm taking these steps because I want my commitments, my words to you, to not just be words, but I want them to be followed by steps. I'm going to show you, man, I'm pointing my life in this direction. This is where I'm trending. What a beautiful, beautiful thing to give to your spouse. So I don't know how this falls. I know this falls in a lot of places this morning. I don't know what your next step is, but as Eric mentioned earlier, in the back of your connection card are some next steps. And I just encourage you over these next moments, as the band plays and as we sing, just read through these. These are just a few. There may be more. There may be another one you need to take, but these are some ones that at least from what we've talked about today, that might be a step you need to take. And then just allow God to maybe reveal to you, here's a step I need to take today. You know, it's a process. It's not doing it all at once. It's a process of moving, growing toward God's design. So as we sing, listen to God be open.